This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, Senator Bill Frist warns and wants to stop filibustering. The Secretary of State says overhaul the UN, a DNA dragnet, and dueling DVDs. Joining us in our bureau here in New York City, E.R. Shipp, a columnist for the New York Daily News. At Spotland Production in Nashville, Tennessee, Jeff Obafemi Carr, host of the radio show Freestyle, and Joe Perkins, columnist for the San Diego Union-Tribune, joins us, I suspect, somewhere in California, though it doesn't say here. Let's get into a statement that was made by Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice late last week, on Friday, to be specific, and her suggestion is that the United Nations needs to overhaul to, quote, to survive as a vital force, end quote. It is the strongest criticism yet that we have seen from this administration, yet they have been very critical of the United Nations of late, and many see the choosing of John Bolton, a longtime critic of the organization, to be UN ambassador as yet another slap against the United Nations. What is this saying to people, E.R. Shipp, in your opinion?
Well, this administration has, as you said, had complicated relations with the UN, and the Republican leadership in Congress for many years has had complicated relations with the United Nations. You don't have a sense that the U.S. makes the United Nations a priority unless it needs help, as when Colin Powell went to try to encourage other nations to join in the invasion of Iraq, with misleading information, and they're still trying to recover from that. By criticizing the UN in the manner in which Secretary of State Rice did, I think she was actually kind of providing cover for Bolton, whose nomination has caused a number of problems based on his management style and his previous statements indicating that he doesn't really support the United Nations himself.
Mm-hmm. Gentlemen?
Well, Ed, the United Nations is an important institution and has been since its inception, but I don't think anyone can disagree that it's an institution that's roiled in trouble. I mean, beginning with the oil for food scandal, in which it finds itself where under the UN's administration, Saddam Hussein managed to amass some $17 billion in illicit oil revenue by smuggling, skimming, kickbacks. Kofi Annan, the UN Secretary General, his son is involved in this scandal. Then there's also the scandal involving UN peacekeepers who have been systematically, over a period of time, abusing young women, younger and older women, for sexual favors in Africa. And I'm saying that's not the United States doing. Mm-hmm. It's the UN's doing.
How much of this? Go ahead.
Okay. I have a thought on that. When you talk about some of the abuses that are going on with the UN, we know that there are definitely reforms that need to take place within the UN, and there have been reforms that have been needed in all throughout the 60-year history of the organization. I think what's happening now with Annan, he's trying to make reforms, but they're not going fast enough for the U.S. The U.S. is in a unique position. They are saying that the UN needs reform, but the U.S. itself needs a lot of reform, and this policeman of the world mentality is getting to be dangerous. I think Algeria's ambassador's summation of the proposal to bring in the outside military intervention that's called the responsibility to protect sums it up pretty good. When they talk of allowing for the rescue of people from abuses and from genocide and other things, he asked the question, would this responsibility to protect apply to all nations or just the little ones? I think that when you have inequalities going on between smaller developing nations who need the aids and reforms that are taking place and larger nations that seem to want to be bullies, there are going to be some problems that I think go beyond what Condi is talking about.
But, Jeff, the fact that, as you suggest there, the United States needs reform, does that allow them or does that not allow them to honestly suggest if they see improprieties and other things that need to be corrected, the inability to say something?
Yeah, I think it's hard for you to say things when you can't point a finger. It's hard to throw a rock when you're in a glass house. I think especially when you have set the tone, as I believe ER said, for sending up a smokescreen. When on one hand you say you want to have reforms and you want to work with the UN, you want the UN to work, but do you want the UN to work for you? Or do you want to work for the UN for the common good of all the nations provided? Or
Joe Perkins, let me ask you this. The idea that Jeff is suggesting there, and we do see it, it seems like every other day you do get contradictory messages. At times, the UN is brought in, for instance, on the watch on Cuba. For instance, the United States is saying, hey, great job, keep watching, yet we see the criticism. Are we playing a double-edged sword here?
Well, I think it's appropriate to do that. When the UN comports itself admirably, as it has done in some cases, then the U.S. should congratulate the UN and commend the UN. But when they fall short, which they've done with respect to the oil for food scandal, with respect to the sex scandal, then I think it's incumbent upon the U.S. and other nations to make that plain as well. I mean, let's be frank about this. The people of the United States provide more than 20% of the UN's funding. I think we have a right to expect the UN to be accountable for the tens of millions of dollars that the U.S. Subsidizes this agency. Moreover, I mean, they're housed free of charge on Manhattan's east side, so is it too much to expect that the UN would police itself, police the people who work for the UN around the world? I don't think so.
E.R. Shipp, well, let me ask you before you pick up that point. Joe brings up an interesting suggestion there, and that has always been the rub with the United Nations, that perhaps in what is supposed to be a house of equals, the United States has never, quite frankly, been equal. They've always been top dog.
Yeah, the United States thinks of itself as someone said, the leader of the world, I suppose. It's among equals. It's the greatest one of all, I suppose. But the United Nations can only function well when the nations of the world do come together and when they do live up to their pledges of what they are going to do with the United Nations. Often the United States is one of those nation states that does not pay its pledges on time. It withholds money to try to browbeat the United Nations into its version of reforms, and it annoys the rest of the world community.
All right, let me move on to something else that was in the news over this past weekend and brought up an interesting controversy. Arrest made in a Cape Cod writer's murder of 2002. Police, in fact, have arrested a trash collector this past week in the murder of a fashion writer living on Cape Cod. But here's the controversy in this investigation. DNA samples were used to arrest this man, but during the time of the investigation, what they called a DNA dragnet was put out, and they literally asked the entire town, men in that town, to provide DNA samples to essentially cancel themselves out of the idea of being a suspect in this murder. Joe Perkins, a lot of folks, including those at the ACLU, feel that this is an infringement on personal rights, while others suggest that, hey, if you're innocent, other than a little bit of time and some saliva, what are you losing out on?
Well, in this particular case, I happen to agree with the ACLU. I really have a problem. I think it violates the Constitution. We have a presumption of innocence. I think it perhaps might be a violation of the Fifth Amendment in terms of I think it's an unreasonable search to ask innocents to provide a DNA.
That will be the Fourth Amendment.
I'm sorry, the Fourth Amendment. And we are seeing this increasingly throughout this country. I mean, here in the state of California, on the last ballot, there was a proposal to create a statewide DNA data bank. And that data bank would include not only those who've been convicted of crimes, but also those who've merely been arrested. And I'm sure you are aware, Ed, that most of the people who are arrested aren't ultimately convicted of crimes, yet all of them would have to submit DNA samples. And so we are starting to increasingly become a society where everyone's personal data, their most intimate information, is in some huge data bank that is overseen by the government. And it's trickled all the way down to the level where in a certain community in Massachusetts, all the men are asked to provide samples to ascertain whether they might be guilty of a crime. And I find it really troubling.
E.R. Shipp, they say the way of the world is simply forget being arrested. They were all going to, frankly, be on a database soon, and they're just going to be able to pull you up if they choose to.
Well, I was thinking it kind of sounds like some episode of The Twilight Zone that we would have seen years ago as kids and never really imagined that this actually would come true. What strikes me is that particularly in the last few years, we are finding that we're giving up more and more of our privacy rights, that we're being intruded upon by government in ways that are not really American, the way we used to think of America. I don't know if it's post 9/11 or what, but we're gradually giving up a lot of our rights without being outraged enough. This is something to be outraged about, that you can be coerced into giving a DNA sample and then not knowing what's going to become of that sample in the future. In fact, they had this man's DNA sample for a couple of years, by the way. So good police work and good lab work, they could have solved this case.
Well, and there, therein lies part of the problem. They, in fact, did have this for a couple of years. And the simple backlog in trying to get these DNA samples tested, and the fact that police did not try to move it up the chain, that they thought they had a hot suspect, again, belies the point that there are bugs to be worked out in the system. Jeff?
Yeah, CODIS. The FBI already maintains a database. It's called CODIS, the Combined DNA Indexing System. And it also has the Convicted Offender Index. But when we talk about people being arrested and being in a database, that's one thing. But now there are coming calls from state and local levels to just create a national database where you would actually be sampled by at birth for DNA. And it's all, of course, in the interest of better crime control. But once again, it is one of those sci-fi scenarios. And I think a dangerous precedent is being set here. When I think about the flaws and the possibilities, I get scared when I think about where society is heading with technology. And there's another point to be raised here. And I think about it from the victim's perspective. And I wonder how we would feel if one of our relatives were victimized. Would we take the do whatever you have to do to make this right stance?
Always an interesting point. I
would still find it troubling. I don't think the end justified the means in this particular case. I agree with ER. It's not just with DNA. It's a whole range of issues. I see privacy rights being threatened by government, by the private sector. I mean, just last week there was a story about LexisNexis disclosing the data on hundreds of thousands of Americans who probably didn't know that there was a database with all sorts of personal information on them that was amassed by LexisNexis. So, and what I'm really concerned about is a marriage of these various databases, the DNA database with the financial database, with your health care database, and wherever there's information out there, there is room for abuse.
It's always interesting to even talk about privacy in today's world. It is almost a misnomer. Let's talk quickly about what's going on in Baltimore and surrounding areas. A DVD entitled Stop Snitching circulated around neighborhoods as a way for drug dealers to warn residents not to cooperate with Baltimore police. Now authorities are countering with their own DVD called Keep Talking. This video produced is obviously suggesting if you want your neighborhoods clean and safe, you better keep snitching. What about this?
I think it's rather silly, actually. Dueling DVDs. Well, for the don't snitch one was rather silly, and that was actually tempting the police to come back with some response, whether it was going to be a DVD.
Silly, but I would suspect also intimidating for those who receive them in those neighborhoods.
Definitely that, but I don't think the police response necessarily had to be the same medium. They could have done what they normally do with community outreach, one presumes, which is just speak to people and tell them how the system works. But this makes them look a little trivial.
How much of this, Jeff, is possibly good marketing, if you will, because you're not going to see the same number of people come to a community town hall meeting that you might if you just pop a DVD into their mailbox?
I think it's great marketing. I think it's phenomenal marketing. I think it's visionary marketing for the Stop Snitching video. I don't think that people are going to go out and buy the Keep Talking video or even watch it. I think now the sales for Stop Snitching are going to go out the roof because people want to see what this controversy is all about. You've got Carmelo Anthony, I believe, he was in the video joking around with some of his friends from the old neighborhood. And even the producer of the video said that it was just a joke video and it was not as serious as it's been taken. If so, are we going to start caring or providing Larry Brown with a bigger entourage? Because in the video, they said if he comes in to the Baltimore area, they're going to lynch him because he benched Carmelo Anthony in the Olympics. This is something that was generated by some guys in the neighborhood. And now, because of some of the issues that were in there with the drug dealing and the snitching and some of the imagery that's apparently on the cover with the three dead people with snitch control on it, I think now the police have joined the foray, and all it's going to do is put some more money in the people who produce the Stop Snitching videos pocket.
Well, I think it's a very serious matter that's been trivialized as far as I'm concerned, and that is drug abuse and drug-related violence is rampant not only in Baltimore but in many inner cities throughout America, and I think it's irresponsible of the people who even put the music video out. Now, some would say, oh, gee, it's just music. It doesn't have any influence. Well, it's part of the popular culture, and our young people in this country and in these inner cities are influenced by the popular culture. And when you have a video out that's tacitly endorsed by an NBA star saying, don't snitch, it's almost countenancing illegal behavior. It's encouraging the retaliatory violence by drug dealers. And I'm not saying that what the police did was the right kind of way to counter it. I agree that it probably will give this video and its authors probably more revenue in their pockets. Nevertheless,
let me just stop you there, Joe, for a moment as guilt by association. But we should note that Carmelo Anthony is not suggesting within the video not to snitch.
Right.
Forgive me, but he is a part of the video, as Jeff suggested
these were. Well, I'll give him a pass on
friends.
That, especially if he does some public service announcements. But you know, the fact that he was in it is kind of troubling too. But we've got a real problem with drugs and drug related violence in the communities, and I just really think that these record companies, these video producers, are really irresponsible when they put something out like this, even if they say it was just a joke.
Well, and again, just so we'll note, this was not done by a record company, but as Jeff suggested, just because of the advent of technology, people can put out whatever they want, and this was group of neighborhood folks who indeed produced this video and put it out. But nonetheless, as we see, the black market video is booming, and there is a market for this kind of thing. E.R. Shipp, Jeff Obafemi-Carr, and Joe Perkins, I thank you all for being with us. Greatly appreciate it. We didn't get to the filibuster that Bill Frist wants to stop. We'll talk
about
that.
Because we filibustered.
That's exactly right. We'll talk about that sometime this week.